Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 9, Episode 12, titled Guardians. Aaron, what'd you think of this episode?
I continue to enjoy these episodes of The Walking Dead. They've been my summer balm. This is the kind of shit that I wanted to see. The tension between, you know, the good governance that Michonne wanted to put in versus her fear and kind of paranoia, and the tension between that and democracy. The shit going on in Negan is really good. I even like the personal drama between, like, you know, the weird love quadrangle between Gabriel and Rosita and Sadiq and Eugene. Rhombus, it's a love rhombus is what it is. I enjoyed
it's
Eugene's beaded ponytail.
The one thing it's not is a quadrilateral. Forget about that.
No. Yeah, get that shit out of here. I think the whisper culture is frankly fascinating, although I have many, many questions about how they maintain the safety of that camp. How do they not keep guardians bum-rushing them all the time? You know, maybe when you call the whole pack together to witness some kind of bizarre ritual, you leave a lookout or two. Uh-huh. So you get more than like 1 second notice of the slow shambling dead coming to eat you all.
Yeah.
I got some notes for them. But, you know, they're crazy. They're crazy. Mm-hmm. They're clearly insane. So that's entertaining. I love the is it Connie? Is Connie the deaf woman? I love the Connie and Daryl roadshow.
Yeah. It so is, far, so good.
Really good. I thought this episode was great. What'd you think?
I don't know what to do with episodes like this, because, like, how do I make fun of an episode that's decent? How do I talk about an episode of The Walking Dead that's decent? It all feels like they're conspiring against me to ruin this podcast, because I have no idea what to say. I've never seen Walking Dead that's this competent, at least not in, you know, 8 years. I don't know what to do with it, but yeah, it's a good episode. I like the sort of, you know, the hypocrisy that they're pointing out on both sides of the leadership fence here, between, you know, they're contrasting and paralleling at the same time Michonne and Alpha and their leadership styles, and that's all good stuff. I enjoyed this episode, I hate to say.
Yeah, they even snuck in a little bit of biblical imagery with, you know, her mom's talking about lying and passing her the apple. Maybe a little bit of Sleeping Beauty, or what is it, Sleeping Beauty, Snow White imagery in there too.
Okay.
But it's all, like I said, all these like multiple episode character arcs are actually coming together and firing on all cylinders, surviving a 5-year time jump. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible.
And they've got, you know, still the same high standards for their practical effects, with Nicotero doing a truly outstanding skin peel in this episode.
Peeling that zombie. Ooh, ooh.
Yeah, it was nasty, but very
pretty
cool.
Pretty nasty.
All right, maybe we should get into the recap then.
I will say that if I was a Whisperer, I think this beard would come in clutch, because apparently you don't need the bottom half of a walker if you got a beard.
Yeah.
Like, everyone, honestly, if you're capable of growing a beard in the Whisperers organization, you should absolutely grow a beard, because having that, like, off your mouth hole, it's got to be hygienic, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, how many times would your walker skin mask slip into your mouth?
Oh, the number is clearly not zero. Not at all. Right. Not at all.
I couldn't handle it. Yeah, so much to talk about, but we'll get there.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question: who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
All right, we start off with Alpha asking a bunch of questions about Lydia's time at the Hilltop. Lydia says she lied to get her captors to trust her, and then gives Alpha info about the Hilltop. Alpha's pissed that she got so little info, and Lydia asks if the info is the only reason she came to get her. Alpha says, well, that's a stupid question, and not in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the way that says, oh, of course I love you, daughter. No.
Right. More of just like, yeah, this is a fascinating scene. Number one, I love it that it's kind of like an homage to the classic Aaron Sorkin walk and talk. Mm-hmm. This is a shamble and whisper.
Okay.
But I liked it because I honestly couldn't tell how much Lydia was lying to protect like the Hilltop, or, you know, to not help her mother. Because she said some accurate information, I think. Mm-hmm. Like the state of the Hilltop's defenses are probably like, I feel like they have guns, but probably not enough, and they have primitive weaponry and all that kind of stuff. But she also told big fibs. I mean, one of the big revelations that Henry slipped up was that they do have other outposts nearby.
Yeah.
But they don't trade. So like, I was trying to get like a feel of whether how much she was lying to her mom, how much was she trying to protect Henry and the Hilltop. And I think what's an amazing, the conclusion I drew, is I don't think Lydia kind of quite understands what she's going to do and how much mm-hmm. she wants to tell her mom and what she wants to happen here. Like, she's kind of figuring out, and like that all kind of came across in the performance and the writing.
That's kind of the driving tension throughout this episode from her end as a character. And I liked it. Because it's a big question mark, right? Like, she's seen the other side. The grass is much, much greener. But there are a lot of barriers still in her way to getting to that grass. So what's she going to do?
Yeah. And also the mother, like, I think it's an open question throughout this episode whether she actually did go back for her daughter because it was her daughter, or whether she thought her daughter was going to be a chop off the old block and would come back with this wealth of information, because that's what Alpha would have done.
Yeah.
And like, did she, like, is this disappointment in the fact that she didn't live up to her expectations? Is it disappointment because she did break the rule because that's her daughter? Like, there's a lot of gray not just in the writing and performances, but I think intentional, where the characters, like, I don't know if Alpha really understands why she went back. You know, is it because she loves her daughter in some twisted way? Is it because her daughter is her possession? Is it because her daughter is like some kind of narcissistic reflection of her that's always capable of, you know, disappointing her? Like, there's a lot of fucking really good psychology going on here, and I'm digging it.
Yeah. I was worried for Lydia when I saw that she lost her walker skin, which, of course, she did.
Right, right.
But I kind of was wishing they would do a little bit more with that, like have a small herd come through, right? And they have to sort of, like, how would they handle that if Lydia's in their group with no walker skin? Do they kind of keep her away from the pack? Do they surround her and kind of lead the walkers in other directions? I wanted to see something.
It did seem like she was in the nucleus, and she was also doing the walker affect. So like maybe like this stench surrounds her and she keeps her head down. But yeah, I kind of wondered that myself. And I bet we get answers as we go on. But like, I was just amazed at like how a lot of this is the same kind of complicated ground they covered on HBO's Sharp Objects last year, or maybe it was the year before.
Okay, sure.
It's a lot of this is Sharp Objects, only they're wearing dead people skin, which is, Sharp Objects was insane, and this is like insane. It's like adding some Ed Gacy shit, or Ed Gain, or I forget who the psycho clown killer is, but adding some Texas Chainsaw Massacre on top of the already crazy narcissistic love tragedy circle of the daughter and the mom here. And Samantha Morton is she's crushing it as Alpha.
All right, let's go over to Michonne hearing about the whole mission they had to set up this radio relay, and she's super pissed that she wasn't consulted. Gabriel and Michonne continue not to see eye to eye about Alexandria's isolation. Aaron sides with Michonne based on the new enemy they've found, the Whisperers. Sadiq's bummed that they can't go to Ezekiel's fair. Michonne refuses to risk her people's lives to prop up the kingdom, especially because Ezekiel has said he doesn't want to abandon the kingdom just yet.
Yeah, it's starting to sound like this this kingdom festival might be like a fire fest. You know, if Ezekiel busts out on that elk, he's got nothing to feed anybody. You're down to one slice of bread and a slice of bologna. All of their residential places are becoming uninhabitable. Mm-hmm. Like, you've got all the I don't think we're too far off of our commercial for the kingdom's Renaissance fair. Like, it does seem like Ezekiel's trying to gild the lily a little bit. Maybe he's going for broke on that projector because, like, hey, we really got to have some razzle dazzle. Without the razzle dazzle, we got nothing. Mm-hmm. We got a movie and some elk. We got one elk to go around.
Well, it's starting to feel like a post-apocalyptic farmer's market with the way they describe it as like a trade fair. I'm starting to get the vibe that it's not going to be like this celebration. It's going to be more just like browsing products. That's not a great fair, I don't think. Right. But okay.
Yeah, we brought elk and movies. I assume you guys brought working boilers and a bunch shovels. Of PVC pipe and shovels and I do think that, like, I guess a minor criticism I have is I don't think they did a very good job of telling us, explaining to us the kingdom's dire straits. Like, I thought,
yeah,
they were in trouble, but, like, you know what? They get some engineering help. They get Henry does a blacksmith apprentice, and they'll be right as rain. But it seems like there's something larger, and I just don't know what it is.
No, it, like, felt weird last episode when they introduced, I thought, that concept that the kingdom was just, you know, very quickly becoming uninhabitable. But, like, I haven't seen the thing that makes me think that. Like, a water pipe can be fixed.
Yeah, it's like 21st century uninhabitable, you know? Right. Like, you know, maybe running water won't work and you might have to go out to outhouses, but, like, uninhabitable from, like,
right?
You got farmlands, you've got structures that will take a lot of time to rebuild some other place. And a lot of time, you know, like, everyone says, like, oh, look at The Last of Us, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a true fact that, like, if buildings are unmaintained, they quickly are reclaimed by nature. But most of that is, if you keep a roof in good repair, the structure will stay up for a long, long time. That's why they used to cover bridges. Because it's the rain and the freeze cycles and all that kind of shit that really do a number on buildings. So it's like, can Ezekiel's people fucking thatch a roof? Can they throw a tarp over a hole? Like, what the fuck? I don't understand why it is in a state of collapse. Like, yeah. If there was a food blight, okay, you know, or something like that. They had a fire that raged out of control. But I really want to know why the kingdom is in such dire straits.
Yeah.
And how trade will magically fix things.
Yeah. It was hilarious to me when I think it's Gabriel says to Michonne, we gave you the power to veto our plans based on security concerns, and now everything's a security concern. Yeah, no shit. That's how power abuses of power work, man.
Yeah,
like, you give an inch, they take a mile. That's
we even talked about that, like, when we got to the whole, like, you know, council can be suspended in times of crisis. Like, oh, boy, that's... Mm-hmm. You can hide a lot of fucking bullshit abuses of power into that little clause there, Michonne.
Yeah, checks and balances, motherfuckers. We need them.
It also, I felt like Gabriel sounded like a little bit of a petulant teenager, you know, kind of like, you know, we took every precaution, Mom. Oh, yeah? Well, then why did Jesus die? Can you answer me that? Can you answer me that? You can still sometimes, like, take every precaution and people die.
Yeah.
You know,
that's true.
Shit happens in the real world, and you can be as careful as you want. I thought, again, it's good stuff because Michonne, as Aaron shows, you know, like, Michonne's policy will keep you alive when you might otherwise be dead. But some of the long term questions they have here, where, you know, well, what if we cut ourselves off from the world and that's what kills us? Mm-hmm. What if we need friends and allies and they're gone because we've let those relationships rot, or we weren't there to help them when they needed us? Yeah, like, the world's big and you're very small. You do need help. You do need allies. And this, again, it's like, man, look at all this conflict they're generating, and it's entirely fresh. It's new. It makes sense.
Uh-huh.
Like... It's infinitely more gripping than just waiting for the next cool zombie effect that we shambled through for so many years in The Walking Dead.
Sure. And they're not even skimping out on that.
Mm-mm.
Okay, Rosita's having trouble fitting in her pants, and she apologizes to Gabriel for the situation that he's currently in with her and Sadiq's baby, and says that he's free to opt out of being a part of it if he'd like.
She's extremely cool about this. Like,
yeah.
I want you on this journey, but I understand why you might not want to. And not only am I going to put this entirely in your court, but I'm going to give you the space. Like, I'm not even going to sit here and, like, make, you know, big baby eyes at you until you decide. Mm-hmm. I've got my own house. I've got my own, you know, it's like, Rosita doesn't need no man. Mm-hmm. She's got the village to help her out. So it's great. You know, she does need some stretchy pants.
Yep.
Yep. Because those low slung hip huggers aren't going to get the job done for much longer.
Nope.
But yeah, and you know what? Gabriel's going through a lot too. Like, I imagine it must be somewhat emasculating to be the leader of a council who has no real power. Mm-hmm. You know, has this crazy person always just putting the kibosh on everything due to security concerns. So. It's not just like he's got one thing to worry about. He's got a lot of things. He's probably also feeling guilty for fucking up the Negan thing. Mm-hmm. So he's still a lot on his plate.
Don't really know how he feels about Jadis and that whole thing. Like, it's been 6 years. We didn't get any resolution to that.
We didn't. I think that some of this drama comes from his personal convictions, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he's probably pretty conservative, personally speaking, and he might think that the baby is going to do best. Well, I mean, he articulates that he thinks what's best for the baby is, like, his moral code.
Mm-hmm.
And Eugene actually has some smart things to say about that. What do you know?
Sure. So the Whisperers are hanging around a creek, and Lydia finds a dirty yo-yo, which is not a euphemism. does this thing come back? This yo-yo, because I looked down for a brief second when Henry's looking at her later in the episode, and I thought maybe she was, like, out there doing, you know, rock the cradle or something with that thing, but I've missed it.
I think she was showing off her, she, like, Henry gave her a hilltop necklace or something. She got in and she was showing that necklace to him, like, hey, I'm still on your side. It was okay. The signal, I think. But no, I think this yo-yo obviously will come back since they really noticed it. This whole scene is, I mean, as much as I've been loving the season, it's awkward as fuck. Like, this establishing shot, it just felt very Next Generation, where, like, they've got a soundstage dressed as an alien village. And it's an alien village, right? What do alien villagers do? I don't know. They're going to come around with a bucket with an LED sign on it, dipping water out of a well. There might be doing some weird alien crafts, but what does an alien craft look like? I don't know. We're writers. We can spend like 15 minutes on this before lunch. And it just felt like they're just all kind of crouching around, pecking in the dirt. You know, Alpha's just stomping around like... Uh-huh. And I guess you're supposed to understand that they intentionally staged this for Henry, that they made Henry at some point that he's following, and they set in this trap for him. But it didn't feel like I was seeing like a slice of Whisper life. It felt like no one knew what the fuck to do.
No, I think
and
when
it
they
was
get
an
back,
awkward 30 seconds of filming.
When they get back to the camp, it's better, certainly. Things to do there, like you're saying. But Henry's sneaking around and he gets caught by Beta, and they threaten him until he reveals that he's from Hilltop and he's here for Lydia, and she socks him in the mouth. Alpha does.
Lydia does. Lydia's the one that punches him. Yeah.
And they decide to take him wherever they're headed, which we find out later is their camp.
Yeah. And as I said, it's awkward scene. And then Lydia just finding a yo-yo apropos of nothing.
Yeah. And then it never coming back in this episode. Is this? I feel like this is another key card.
Yeah, I hope that they're not going to go like wrist rocket with this, where this is going to be her signature weapon,
like a Goonies video game.
The fucking the fucking Duncan butterfly yo-yo. She's going to sharpen those edges and just throw a sick sleeper right into a walker's skull. Walk the dog. Do the trapeze and then garrot somebody with it, like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, what if she took the chain that her mom's got and just substituted the string for that?
There you go. I'm telling you, I wouldn't put it past The Walking Dead, because the wrist rocket is just on the border of being ridiculous. Yeah. But I own a couple of those things, and I believe you absolutely could put a steel BB through a walker, soft walker skull. Mm-hmm. Maybe not a fresh one, but soft walker skull with enough skill, sure.
I would certainly not believe a yo-yo.
Yeah, a razor wire garroted yo-yo. I mean, I'm starting to talk myself into it, honestly. Mom's garrot wire to it, yeah. Uh-huh. I kind of want to see it now.
Ugh.
She can show it off in the talent portion of the Kingdom Fair.
Great. You know what I want to see?
You know what, dude? What's that? I was going to say, we might get the fair this season.
Oh, I because think, yeah. Last episode is going to be the fair, right?
It's like 2 days away. Now, I don't know how the hell they do that, if there's going to be open war with the Whisperers. Seems like crazy fast to wrap that up before. Maybe they have the fair and the Whisperers crash.
Yeah, fair.
And that's what destroys that's what destroys the kingdom, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And gets Ezekiel off the, like, him wanting to squat on the throne. I don't know.
Coming through the busted pipes. Yeah.
That's the upcoming Jay-Z Kanye collaboration, Squat the Throne. Inspired by season 9 of The Walking Dead.
They're watching. I'm sure.
I mean, obviously, sure, Kanye's watching. Bored with this COVID shit. He's like, fuck it, run for president, do some Walking Dead inspired raps. Why not?
Mm-hmm. All right. Eugene goes to Gabriel with equipped fully with the charts and graphs to prove that he can live with the knowledge that Rosita is raising Sadiq's baby and living with Gabriel. It's hilariously Eugene. He also tells Gabriel that he has to get over himself and stay with Rosita, even though it's not his baby. Finally, Eugene gives him some stretchy pants for Rosita. I like this scene. Over the years, Eugene has gone from just a truly ridiculous character to a character that's ridiculous and I think of as a human being now.
fits into the world.
He's just the... I don't know. Hanging around this guy would be just a real chore most of the time, but at least he seems like he has emotions, and they've done enough with him at this point to where I can understand what he's trying to say when he speaks, and B, why he's doing the things he's doing.
I think it helps when you kind of broadly know coming into the conversation what the hell he's trying to do and say, mm-hmm. because most of the time in previous seasons, he would just interject some, you know, nonsense.
Yeah, stats about like, the bridge what or whatever.
Yeah, what's he trying to do? Like, you know, we knew he came into a head of steam, and he was either going to try to... I wasn't sure whether he's going to try to put Gabriel off or put Gabriel on to the Rosita situation. But it turns out he genuinely loves Rosita, mm-hmm. sees that she has a genuine love for Gabriel, and, you know, he actually spoke plain English. You'd be a damn fool if you let her go. And like, okay, yeah, he's doing... This decision matrix is adding up. He's doing the right thing.
He's got a very long-winded way of saying pros and cons list, but other than
yeah, that. And I wouldn't suspect Eugene of being this big of a respecter of women, but the whole like, you know, you need to come correct on this because it's not your decision, it's not Sadiq's decision, it's her decision. Like if she what's best for the baby is going to be whatever however she wants to make it, this, and she'd already said that, like, you know what, I'm going to handle the Sadiq thing. We'll work things out, however, but like I want to make this work with you, so you already know the intention. Good advice. And
any respect he's got for women is a recent development, as in this episode, kind of recent. Because just a few episodes ago, he was having the whole security force spy on her and using like his little birds to figure out who she's dating. It was fucked up. It was completely fucked.
But He did the thing that most people in the friend zone don't do, which he actually got his courage up and took a shot.
Tried to, then, like, a few times, right? Did he ever actually get it out?
I think he did. Maybe not. But I thought he did in the, like, the medical wing. He actually got to say his piece.
I thought he started to, and Rosita just left. Like, left the room.
Just shut him down. But I think he interpreted that as him trying to take a shot, and he missed, and instead of being like, well, fuck that bitch anyway, he's being real mature about it. So, good on Eugene. Do you think he uses his beaded ponytail as an abacus?
Sure.
Let me show you this decision matrix. He grabs it and starts click, clack, 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 you know. Look how many potential future years of happiness you have here, mm-hmm. Gabriel. You know, it's like, how many do you think you're going to have a natural child of your own, Gabriel? Well, let me put that in my calculation. Yeah. It's an improvement over the mullet, right?
I mean, anything is an improvement over a mullet, but I stared at his hair for a very long time in this episode, trying to figure out what's happening. Because, like, there's the ponytail part, but it doesn't... I don't think it blends into the top part seamlessly. Like, the top part seems shorter.
No. Like, I was trying to... is there a leather braid going on? And then it's certainly beaded, but yeah, no, they're...
But I think the top is his real hair, and then the ponytail is just, like...
It's a weave, man.
Woven into it? Yeah.
I think he's like, hey, if you want me to come back and play this ridiculous goddamn character, I'm not wearing a mullet year-round. You got to get some kind of weave going on. So I think it's probably a clip-on beaded ponytail at this point.
I feel like, I don't know, maybe I didn't see, I wasn't interpreting what I was seeing correctly, but they should have probably gone with a full wig for him. Although it would have been a bad one. So maybe not. All right, Alf,
it's funny because like we just did the Hunt for Red October review a couple weeks ago, where we found out that Sean Connery had the $20,000 hairpiece at the Silver Fox. Everyone knows he's famous for it. Mm-hmm. But what you might not know is it originally had a long and prominent silver ponytail attached to the end.
Yeah, like a waterworld kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Eugene could have just gone with that, just like, you know, gone with the full Connery. Obviously not silver, because he's not that old yet, but like, go with the Marco Ramius Mark One ponytail and skip the beads, man. You don't need them.
It probably would have come out of his salary, but yeah. All right, Alpha questions Lydia about her time with Henry. They merge with another group of Whisperers and end up at their camp, and Beta takes Henry to get a new skin for Lydia.
And they have a truly massive camp. I was amazed at how well they're doing just squatting out here in the woods.
Yeah.
And I'm really curious about what kind of like anti-walker defenses they have, because the vast majority of them are just in there, no mask, you know?
Right.
I'm also curious why they brought the girl with the fucking baby on the assault mission. Like they're like, I'm starting
that's
to wonder.
A damn good point. I don't know.
Well, it could be this Alpha's just a maniac, you know, and there is this, like, you know, as she says in this episode, this time, this challenge, it's been a long time since it's been challenged, and this one felt different. Maybe there's a whole bunch of questionable things, like maybe she doesn't want, babies in the group for whatever reason, because it makes her daughter special or something. I don't know. And she does shit like this that. Well, you know, if you're going to have a baby, you're going to have to, you know, the mama tiger brings the baby out on the hunt. And so whatever fucking bullshit she gets from some half-remembered National Geographic thing. I mean, it's funny because like this whole alpha beta concept has been widely discredited amongst animal behavioral. What do they call that? What do you call that? A biologist? Naturalist? Like sure. That was like. That was one dude doing shit out in the Alaskan frontier, like coming up with this whole theory. He himself abandoned it later in life, but like now we're all stuck with this alpha beta bullshit dichotomy that certainly it didn't apply to wolves. It certainly never applied to primates. But yeah, she saw that one Into the Wild or Call of the Wild movie, and she's using it to base a whole civilization around with predictable results.
Yeah, I was wondering when they were walking around, do they always mope? Why are they moping around like walkers when there's no threat? Is it just in case? Like maybe they're spotted by humans. They want to make sure they look like walkers. Because certainly with a camp this big, they've got to have lookouts on the perimeter, right? They've got to have, you know, walkers, whisperers dressed as walkers, waiting to lead herds that might stumble upon them away.
You think so, except for the late part of this episode. Of course, I don't know. Maybe we'll talk about that when you get there. But yeah, I don't know, because I never even I was thinking from a zombie perspective. I never thought of like a group of humans like just wandering into this and be like, hey, y'all, how's it all going? Sure does stink in here, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
It does seem like they keep their mask close by because they were able to go from no mask to mask very quickly when they needed to. So, and it's broad daylight. So it's probably fine. There's satisfying answers. And I'm sure we'll get them. Yeah. I got faith in the Kang.
Oh, of course. So Negan gets a visit from Michonne, who wants to know why he came back. He says he overheard things are falling apart in the communities, and he can help her lead if she releases him. Michonne orders the window closed and then spots Judith spying and chases after her. I'm so Negan's talking some sense here. That's you know, when he says that's one hell of a racket you got going, Michonne, you know, tries to deny it, but yeah, it is. Yeah, she's the de facto leader. There's no council.
She's a dictator, benevolent perhaps, but how long will that last, you know?
Right.
Like if you keep a group of people imprisoned against their will, regardless of your stated aims, that's tyranny. You know, you're going to get your tea thrown into a harbor. You keep that shit up.
Yeah. And there's a balance between also, freedom and safety, you know, liberty and security famously talked about many times.
And I think that like Negan, I actually think he's on the verge of actually getting it. Like, I understand why Rick did this. And let me tell you, you want to add some jet fuel to Rick's memory? Rehabilitate me. Like, what if not only was I spared to become this living memorial to Rick's mercy, but what if I actually changed? What if I could become a pillar of the community? What if I was not even seeking out a leadership role, but just like, you know, it was just a solid pillar? Like, but I don't think Michonne's even able to hear that. I think that's the pitch he was making, and he's just like casting around for like, okay, what's a baby step? You know what? We could just talk leader to leader. Oh shit, now it sounds like I'm, you know. But I think he's sincere that like, I don't want to be a part of this old world. It's changed, and I want to be part of it. I don't want to be stuck in here anymore. Now, I think Michonne would be crazy just to jump on that with both feet.
Oh, yeah.
Because even if he's sincere now, what if he gets a little taste of power? Mm. You know, what were his, what will be his ideas for keeping people in line? That's all sketchy. But if he can, it's like, you know, like the Emperor and Vader. If he can be turned, he'd be a powerful ally, right?
Sure.
That would be a real feather in the whole charter's cap that you can rehabilitate somebody like Negan. It'd be, it, yeah, it's compelling. But you also have hundreds of people that have a set feeling about who he is and what he should be and what he can be. And it's not just Michonne. It's all those people you got to convince too.
Absolutely. But it's also most of all Michonne. She's looking at threats from without. She's got to see that this guy is, I mean, to her, in her mind, he is the outsider, right? And like,
right,
opening their gates, you know, figuratively to him is going to be extremely risky in her mind.
It's the, he's the danger, yeah. You know, he's not just a strange, he's stranger danger.
Absolutely. So I, like, I understand where everybody's coming from, and this is why it's good. It's a good episode and good writing, because everybody's got goals that make sense. Everybody's talking, you know, speaking truths. People just disagree. And I think that's the most interesting part.
Yeah, reasonable people disagreeing. Turns out, lots of drama.
All right, Daryl and Connie find evidence of Henry's presence and then kill a couple of walkers. And the dog breaks one of Daryl's arrows or bolts.
Pretty sick, though, that he's got his dog trained to retrieve him for him, though. That's fucking cool.
I love that he breaks it. Daryl's like, bad dog.
Bad dog, yeah. It's, it's really cute. I could have used that in The Last of Us the last few weeks. A trained dog. Uh-huh. All the dogs in The Last of Us 2 are just assholes
yeah,
that need to be put down. If I had one retrieving my arrows, I'd feel different about them. But yeah, good dog. I think you're a good dog.
Beta makes a new skin suit for Lydia as Alpha tries to indoctrinate Henry. A couple challenges Alpha's leadership because they think she broke her own rules by going back for Lydia. So she cuts the woman's head off and then kills her boyfriend.
I think that she's, so if you buy a survival pack, a lot of times they'll throw in this Geralt looking thing that's got like razor wire with some kind of industrial epoxy with like diamond dust glued to it, and you're supposedly able to like saw through a fucking log with those things, you know. And I think that's because there's piano wire, I don't think will do that. I don't think she's strong enough to do that, but like, I don't know, maybe she's got one of them like logger garrotes. It was pretty gruesome though.
Not the only gruesome thing in the scene. That skin, like I was talking about at the beginning, peeling that skin off that walker's head is pretty gruesome.
Yeah.
And they did a hell of a job with the dummy, the model they used.
Yeah, and I like that. Like, there's a multi-pronged disappointment here amongst the group. Like, A, you didn't protect us. Like, that's the whole reason we put up your crazy shit is because you'd keep us safe. Mm-hmm. You didn't do that. Number two, when you failed to protect us, you didn't get us justice. Like, these people that killed so many of ours are just walking free. And three, this whole, like, you know, we don't ever leave anybody behind. We're animals. Like, the second your cub gets in trouble, we throw everything overboard and have to do it. It's like, yeah, no. And it's like, it's not just one fucking thing. It's like, and there's like parallels between Michonne and Alpha throughout the episode. Like, Negan, he knows what's going on because he's heard the grumblings. You know, building and building, like people walking out of that meeting, like, God damn it, Michonne, she's fucking another security exception. What do you know? Mm-hmm. And she keeps doing this stuff. And Alpha, you get the idea that like, this has kind of maybe been a long time coming. Maybe it's been a while. I don't know what you could grumble again. I mean, no, I there's a million things you can grumble with Alpha, but like, I'm sure it seemed like, you know, leaving the baby out there, even though that's what the group does, like, that's probably not super popular. In fact, I thought maybe that was this couple's baby. Do you think that would have been better if they'd made the couple recognizably the baby's father? Or is it actually stronger that some unrelated member of the community is bothered enough by all these different lapses that they're standing up?
I mean, I think either one could have worked. Cause I do buy that, like, you know, if having seen what she's done, that multiple community members would be up in arms right now. Like, maybe not voice that, but definitely be feeling it. And I like, this is the thing with this type of leadership. I don't know how you maintain it in this situation, because like, frankly, if I'm somebody watching this, I'm going, okay, well, this is completely fucked, and Alpha is murdering people who, you know, go against her wishes. I'm probably going to sneak in, kill her in the middle of the night, and leave. Like, that's, and there are so many people in this camp. If even one of them has that idea, she's done. So, like,
yeah,
I don't know. It seems like an unsustainable relationship here.
Yeah. And like, what does a challenge mean? Like, you're right. Like, why announce the challenge? Just come and murder her at night? Or like,
especially after you see what she does in challenges, right?
Yeah. As she's going forward and saying, are you challenging me? Just fucking sucker punch her, or have the, you know, while she's in your face, have your mate stab her in the back and then deal with Beta later. Cause yeah, she uses fucking Beta to win her fights. Speaking of Beta, I do like the man's half walker mask, but his choice to wear a leather duster in the humid Baltimore / DC summer heat.
Yeah.
I mean, I clearly these people don't care about stench.
No.
But just the personal comfort, just the swamp ass and the chafing this man must endure. A black leather duster under layers of zombie skin has got to be amongst the most uncomfortable thing I can think to wear. And like 90-degree heat and humidity, and 90% humidity. It's insane.
I agree. But am I the only one picturing that this is just Rob Zombie underneath all this walker skin? Like, every time I see him, I'm like, oh, that's Rob Zombie. And I don't know why. I just assume.
No, I think you know why. There's there's definitely a little bit of the crusting, you know, hot Mod Podge in his beard.
Yeah.
Corpse and, makeup. Yeah.
You know, he's got a good name for it, at least.
Yeah, he's maybe I would. It's canon now. I think we should stop calling him Beta. Just call him Rob.
Okay. Yeah.
You got Mom, Lydia, Rob, because he's a zombie. Sure. Bravo.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
All right, Michonne asked Judith why she was spying. And Judith says she went to see Negan because he listens to her, unlike some people. Michonne forbids Judith from seeing her because, or from seeing him because he's a monster. Judith thinks he's changed and reminds Michonne that she did too, which gets her sent to her room. Yeah, I like scenes like this. You know, I won't this complain is actually too much about Judith being, you know, an adult here, but like she's pointing out the obvious to Michonne, and fuck you, Michonne, for sending her to her room. Go to your fucking room. You need a minute? Go to your room. Like, she didn't do anything here.
it's above average parenting to have the emotional intelligence to realize that you can't have a rational discussion and send the child to the rooms and talk to him later because, you know, that's like, yeah, I'm trying to think as like an adult would be like, you know what? I'm too angry to talk right now. I need to go for a walk, you know, but that might feel like abandonment to a child. So like sit in your room so we can both calm down and talk about this later. It's like that, like I said, it's and you know, she didn't like flip her shit. She didn't say it in a cruel way.
Yeah.
I think a below average mom, but still understandable when Judith came back with, but why? That's when you'd fucking hit the volcano button. But Michonne still kept it under control. I was impressed. This is a long way away from Lori Grimes. Absentee parenting, let's say.
Well, we've got
in season 1 through 3.
We got the two sides of the coin, right? We got Michonne not blowing up at her daughter and trying to keep things cool. And then you got Alpha on the other side.
Yeah, Alpha just barking at the moon. Yeah.
They're absolutely contrasting these two in this episode. It's all about leadership and parenting. And I'm appreciating what they're doing here. I wonder where it's going to lead, though, because Michonne seems to be softening. Alpha doesn't.
I need to see what kind of fruit Michonne's going to give Judith. What's the equal and opposite of an apple?
Is she old enough for grapes yet?
An orange? A kiwi? A banana? Kiwi.
I think it's kiwi, yeah.
is the equal and opposite of a... If she gives him that, then we know she's on the true symbolic right course.
All those kiwi fruits question. That grow in D.C. and Baltimore area...
Oh, you didn't see they got the heirloom kiwi seeds from the museum? They're ready to go, man.
Awesome.
I got a question. Rick Jr. gets a line win. We've seen him in the margins like 4 or 5 episodes. Michonne checked in. The kids just taking a nap in the middle of the day. Empty house. When's this kid going to get a line? I want to get to know about Rick Jr. What kind of thoughts he's got? He's 6 years old.
When he gets a better agent, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question.
I want to know when we get in the line from Rick Jr. He's got like Michonne's his mom, Rick's his dad, little ass kicker's his sister. That's an interesting guy. I want to hear him speak. Unleash Rick Jr.
When's Judith gonna pass him the Colt? let's get him trained.
They're going to kill off Daryl in season 11 and they'll pass on the crossbow. So they'll have the two iconic weapons in the hands of the successors. Yeah.
I love it. All right. Next up is Henry staring at Lydia and smiling. This is where I looked down and forgot to look back up and write some actual notes. You're saying she was not using the yo-yo?
No, she had a necklace was prominently out. And I know that she got that at Hilltop. It might even be something that Carol gave to Henry to remember them by. Or it might be something the kid... I know it had a little bit of significance to Henry, but like not season-spanning significance. Like 3 episodes ago, this was established as a thing that he gave to her. But you understand that this is kind of her little covert signal that she's still sweet on him. hasn't gone full whisperer back. She's still a whisper top or a hill whisperer. She's still got feelings for him, which will come out. Nice subterfuge with the necklace. It's all going to come out by the end of the episode, hate to tell you.
All right, so then we go over to Alpha remembering the time she watched Lydia suffocating as a young child and then how she taught her a lesson about that. She claims you have to do whatever it takes to protect the group, even from themselves. And Beta is worried that Lydia has forgotten the lessons they've taught her.
Well, you know what she's got to do? She's got to find a whole bunch of laundry, dry cleaning bags. She's got to put them on all their heads and then wait for them all to pass out. I would posit that a child almost dying from having plastic wrapped around their face would probably not do that again. I don't think they need a vicious beating at the end of that.
Yeah.
But... shit, why not reinforce the lesson, right?
Sure. If you're going to be a bad parent, I guess go all the way with it.
Yeah, no, Alpha's family life feels like the Bluth family turned up to 11. You know, like all those little moral lessons that the Arrested Development dad tried to teach his kids. That's why we don't talk to strangers or whatever. That's why we don't play with plastic bags. And then a punch in the face to punctuate it. But yeah, I don't know. She's also, it's weird. Like, do you think her and Beta have a sexual relationship? Because she's got this whole, like, unmask me. And he's like, you know, giving her this very personal service.
She's like, oh, it's been a long time since we've done that.
Oh, I think she was talking about the duel. Like, it's been a long time since her authority's been challenged.
Okay. That makes sense.
Although I did have that thought for like a brief second. Like, it's been a long time since you took your mask off. I watched the last episode, lady. Come on.
Or
you can't
she
do
had
show.
Him take the mask off. I don't know. I didn't think that there might be anything sexual happening with any of these people, but I guess I should have after they said there was a couple. Yeah, and they've got a baby. Like, I just can't picture getting down with anybody who's wearing a walker mask.
It's what the animals do, man. Fucking love that stink.
Ugh.
Like, can you imagine, like, in cave, like, that's, it must have been, like, in caveman times, you know, you're sleeping in animal furs in these filthy caves, you're probably pissing in the back room, no one's had a bath for weeks, and you still, no one's shaven, no one's got deodorant, and you're still finding a way to get it in, Jim.
Yeah.
Like, you know? Life, that's a pretty strong biological imperative right there. Fair no matter enough. How many zombie skins you dress it up in, it's still going to get done. Jeff Goldblum's going to come in there and explain that life's going to find a way. But what do you think the alpha means by we're already ready? Because he's like, we need to be able to protect ourselves, not just from the inside threats, but from the outside too. And she's like, we're already ready. How?
I guess because she probably just talking about herself, right? Like, I'm strong enough to handle maybe. Anything.
That's the thing of the narcissist. Like, you never can tell, like, are they delusional? Are they crazy? Yeah. Is their faith well-founded? Like, they're insane. But I have to wonder, because a small strike team of a deaf woman and a half-feral man and a dog was able to just kick their shit in when all it was a rescue mission.
Yeah.
Like, you get 50 of Hilltop's biggest badasses with spears.
Yeah. They're like, oh, these walls aren't shit. Well, look what happens when you don't have them. Like,
yeah, you call these zombies guardians. Let me explain something to you. Anyone can wear a walker skin. Mm-hmm. This dumb fuck group has done it like 7 different times in this series, just by happenstance and, like, you know, out of desperation. Like, they will absolutely commando up and come and tear your camp apart. These guys are scary because they have the mastery of the herds. But like, I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, imagine if I don't know, you found out that, like, people were super vulnerable to having rocks hit them. You know, like, you just nick them with a rock, they're dead. Like, the first person that picks up a rock and kills, like, they're super powerful, but, like, after 3 days of the rock war, guess what? Everyone's throwing rocks. Like, this is not, and then this is not, like, some superpower you guys have discovered. It can be exploited, and then it's the stinky people with walker skins against the other stinky people with walker skins with a strong community, walls, and support system behind them. And guess what? Yeah. Logistics win wars. Uh-huh. So I'm very curious about.
They're scary because they are so foreign, right? Like, as a concept,
right.
The idea that someone would do the things they're doing has never occurred to anyone other than them.
Right.
And so nobody knows how to fight them. Nobody knows what they're thinking at any given time. I think that's the scary part, is they're so unpredictable, because how do you get in the headspace of someone who wears a walker skin? I don't know. And you said, with their ability to control herds, that's their only real weapon. I don't know. As soon as they figure out, like, okay, we actually don't have to be afraid of these people because they have huge weaknesses, they're going to be done.
Yeah. And how, like, it seems like you could still redirect, like, they send a herd at you. Well, they know how to redirect it. So just be like,
yeah, get your
this
sirens
endless holding
going.
Pattern. And the crucial thing is, they're behind walls and you're not, and they can pick you off. And like, eventually you'll lose control of the herd and then it's all over. Uh-huh. Now I'm waiting and willing to be thrilled with some kind of revelation that I'm not seeing coming. And also, like, I do think that, like, if the Whispers is in the next day or two, just ram this shit down their throat, then that will be a huge blow, because I don't think they're ready to deal with that yet. But like, as this war goes on, it just seems like, you know, they don't have the numbers with all the communities combined. If all the communities can kind of put their shit together and there's nothing, they'll unite a band of fractious people like a common outside threat. Mm-hmm. They have to really be aggressive in this war or they're going to get beat long term. But I don't know. There might be some I did see some firearms amongst the Whisperers, which that might be interesting. Like maybe they have a whole cache that they just leave in reserve. So you've got like, yeah, it's a zombie herd coming at you, but also 1 out of 10 zombies is shooting you. That would be kind of interesting.
But what happens to the zombie who takes the first shot? Like,
that's right. Like
they get swamped.
Yeah. Like you can't like run and take cover because then the zombies kill you.
Yeah.
And if you just continue to shamble, like, well, I that's the zombie right there that shot. Yeah. You're right.
How dumb are the walkers? I don't know, but we'll probably find out. I'm really hoping by the end of the season, we've got 4 more episodes, that we will see some kind of large herd gathered up and sent the way of Alexandria or Hilltop or somebody.
You almost have to, or else like, what is the Whisperer's plan? Because like even internally in the group, they're talking about like amongst the leadership. Oh yeah, this is a threat. We gotta do something to neutralize it. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't feel like something you can like kick to the next season. But
Walking Dead of the past, I would have said they're going to stretch this out at least another half season, but this Walking I'm Dead, guessing, I think that they've got it.
I'm guessing that what's going to happen is the kingdom's going to throw the feast. Everyone's guard is going to be down kind of preposterously. And the Whisperers are going to take that opportunity to ram a walker herd through. Like we said in the beginning, like that's going to convince Ezekiel to get rid of the kingdom. It's also going to get Michonne all worked up and pissed off because she didn't want any of this to happen. And it was all predictable and blah, blah, blah. So there'll be lots of character drama. But
so everybody leaves Alexandria, goes to the kingdom for the fair. Mm-hmm. And then the Whisperers come in, overrun the measly number of guards who are left in Alexandria, take over Alexandria.
Oh, no.
So now it's their city. And then the walker skin sleeping in Michonne's bed. You don't even want it back at that point, right? Just you can have it.
Yeah.
Burn it all to the ground if we get it back.
I don't think they know about Alexander. The Hilltop.
Hilltop
might be like if they take over Hilltop, ooh, that would be interesting because now a lot of the strengths of the community has been neutralized because now the stinky zombie people have a fortified city to fall back to.
And also, you've got one community they've made it apparent is crumbling, right? The kingdom. And then you've got Alexandria, which I know they're not doing as much trade, but if you tried to combine the kingdom and Alexandria into one, I think you would need the Hilltop's food and resources.
Yeah, it might stretch them. Yeah.
Because
like, obviously Hilltop and Alexandria are the shining cities of these communities. I don't know. Seaside might still be doing okay
because they
got fishing and all that.
Haven't even mentioned them this season.
I don't know. It's a popular place for the men for the different societies to ship off to, and the ladies that like ladies. Because it's, you know, what was that? Was it the Beach Boys, 2 girls for every boy?
That sounds right.
The ratios are favorable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Surf City. They're going to Oceanside where it's 2-1. Yeah.
All right. Let's get to the last couple of scenes here. Gabriel returns home, or maybe not home. He's living with Rosita right now, right? I think
Rosita, they're in the early stages where they're spending a lot of time at each other's houses, but Rosita said at the beginning, like, I'm going to go to my home and let you kind of think things over. So probably like she's got at least a drawer. You know, one drawer in his dresser that she's got clothes and vice versa. But they haven't had exchanging key step maybe.
But they all go into a house, him, Rosita, and Sadiq. And Michonne visits Aaron to thank him for his support with the council and tells him that the council should re-vote about the fair and that she won't veto it because even though she thinks it's a terrible idea, the people deserve the right to choose. And we kind of see a montage of the community thriving as Michonne sits and thinks.
Yeah, man. Sometimes believing in democracy means you're going to back a losing horse. I mean, that's just the way it goes. You either trust the people to govern themselves or you fucking don't. And we've tried it both ways throughout human history. It seems like democracy in the long run is the way to go. But it's funny seeing them to discover all this. And I actually really appreciated it. Sadiq, Gabriel, Rosita, Eugene. Like, that's a pretty good show, not tell storytelling thing, because like I thought everyone like really clearly expressed what they were thinking with the significant looks, like, you know, Sadiq, like Gabriel kind of like sizing up Sadiq, and Sadiq being happy that, like, you know, Gabriel's willing to give this whole thing a try, them all going in together, Eugene being, you know, like, it's a bit bittersweet moment, but he's happy that, like, you know, he came up with a plan to help his friends out, and it worked out and everybody's happy. So he's able to take comfort in that. Mm-hmm. Pretty good shit. Pretty good shit for a 30-second throwaway scene with no dialogue.
Yeah. And then during the night, Henry is taken to Lydia, who's given a knife and told to kill him, or Beta will kill both of them. Fortunately, she's spared the decision by a sudden walker attack, and Daryl and Connie show up wearing walker skins. They take Henry and Lydia and flee the scene.
I like that they're calling the walkers guardians. That's kind of cool. You know,
I just wish they had guardians. Like, do you really not have any lookouts whatsoever?
We need a guardian. I think you're supposed to understand that, like, Daryl and Connie, who are no slouches in the killing people department, probably took out, like, you know, because in the earlier establishing scene when they drug out the two dead bodies for the walkers to feed, it established that Daryl and Connie were there checking things out.
Yeah.
So they're probably there all day, checked out the guard rotation, picked off two in a weak spot, and then led the herd on in. Clearly was able to skin walkers and come up with this stuff. So, like, yeah. And again, like, you know, Daryl, like, there's almost nothing. If whatever Daryl and Carol have to do when it comes to assaulting an enemy camp, I'm ready to buy it. Like, yeah. Okay. Like, I've seen Daryl kill a tank with almost his bare hands. I've seen Carol take down a whole camp entrenched with, like, bottle rockets and a machine gun. Like, there are some people that I'm just ready to, like, yeah, if Daryl's got fucking backup and a dog, oh my God, these people are lucky they escaped with their lives. So, yeah, I buy it.
Sure.
And Daryl looked really, like, I thought it was kind of arresting when Daryl caught him up and was like, we've got to go. I'm like, see, fuckers are learning fast.
Yeah. Yeah. Their advantages are slipping away.
And Henry doing the whole, like, well, I'm not going to leave without Lydia, like, putting Daryl in the bind, which I don't think Daryl wanted to fight him too hard on that anyway.
Yeah.
You know, because.
No, I mean, he understands.
Yeah.
You know, the Lydia means something to Henry, and, you know, Daryl gets it.
Well, and the concept of Lydia, this weak, innocent person being put upon, being preyed upon by strong abusers, I mean, that's very personal to him, too. So it's not just, like, only for Henry. Like, God, Daryl's got so much fucking motivation in this scene, and it's great.
It's going to cause big problems, though. I mean, obviously, Alpha's not going to let this go. So she's...
Nope.
First thing gonna come to Hilltop, come knocking, and she'll probably bring a lot of her walker friends.
She has to, because this is a direct, all this is a direct, they've lost yet more people as a direct result of her actions on the day that she just dispatched to probably strong community members for disagreeing with her and saying that this is going to happen. Like, she has no choice but to have some kind of show of strength.
But I also think
this time she doesn't have hostages, so it's just gonna be
right, yeah. It's going to have to be a true show of strength.
And I think she's got to, like, I don't think she's going to give a shit about Lydia either. Like, cause Lydia has embarrassed her by running off.
But there will still be the question of whether she does, right? Like, I think the question going through her community's mind is going to be, why are we going after Lydia? Like, this is yet again, her, you know, forsaking the rules that she put on us in order to go after her daughter. And that's gonna piss a lot more of her community members off.
I think she's gonna have to pitch it as, like, this is no longer a rescue mission. We have nothing to trade. This is vengeance. We are going to destroy this community. And
you can try
my daughter. Like, I think she's gonna even say, like, specifically, we're gonna spare no one. What about your daughter? No, I said no one.
Yeah.
Did I whisper stutter? You know, like, it's
no, but I was way in the back and I couldn't quite hear.
Yeah, I was actually wondering, like, when she addresses the crowd, were they going to do something like she whispers and then they have dedicated whisperer translators that kind of ripple out through? Because they have to, right? You can't just...
Yeah,
they have elaborate bird calls.
You're never going to be able to give a speech.
Yeah, it's like, if everyone agrees, do the whippoorwill. If you don't agree, do the dove. if you have an interjection, hoot like an owl. Like, how do they, is it like one of those old, didn't the Occupy Wall Street, they had the whole, like, they'd snap fingers or rub their hands together to signal assent, or they had a whole kinds of, like, sign language to do nonviolent community organization hippie bullshit.
Huh. I don't know anything.
Maybe the Whisperer's got that stuff, too. Maybe Connie can teach him a thing or two.
Yeah, there you go.
Because, boy, I tell you, the Whisperers could really use sign language.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think walkers would pick up on people using sign language?
Oh, yeah. Walkers are steeped in sign language. They know all about it.
I meant more of like organized like hand signals. I don't know.
That's a good question. Because walkers don't. It's an unnatural movement, right?
Yeah, like they tend to like just leave their hands at their side. But you could see some spasming.
Yeah,
because the nerves are misfiring.
I would think, like, you know how in The Expanse they made the Belter language, big gestures, right? Like big flamboyant movement of the arms because you're in these bulky suits and you got to
read it through a spacesuit. Yeah,
I bet
yeah.
you could do something where like it's all about like shoulder gestures or something, like just the way you're leaning as a walker.
Oh yeah, if you lean into the right, that means yes. You lurch to the left, or you can just moan real loud. You know?
That's true. Yeah.
You know, you can, or hiss, like hissing is no, moaning is yes. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Farting. Yeah. A lot of farting and belching.
A lot of farting and belching.
Mostly gas-based communication.
Mostly gas. You know, subtle differences in aroma.
Really
convey a lot. It's all musk and pheromone-based. But there's no limit to how fascinating I will find these answers. Like, I honestly would eat this shit up if the 30-second scene from here to the end of the episode, the season, establishes some kind of cool, crazy thing about the Whisperers and how they organize and communicate and live. Yeah. Because it is, as much as I like this charter, rebooting democracy 2.0 kind of stuff, I think the Whisperers culture would be fascinating. I think the garbage people could have been the same way. It's just they never bothered to explain any of that stuff or make them seem like they were a real character inhabiting the world.
Yeah. And I think flashback
give me that.
That they had of Alpha and her daughter went a pretty long way toward doing that. You know, she was not. It at least told us like why this community exists and that, yes, she is in fact crazy, but here's what happened. Here's what came out of that.
Yeah,
they wanted us to believe that Jadis and her trash people were not crazy. They were just like doing what they wanted to do to survive. They didn't do that with the Whisperers. They're clearly crazy.
No, they did not. No, they did not. And the other thing is, I got the clear impression, I don't know if you thought so too, that like the story that the Alpha told about her daughter being 3 years old, that was the before times. That wasn't in the zombie apocalypse. She's just an abusive fucking parent.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't like the times made it's like Negan always explained, like the world made him tough. He used to be just a dude, you know, same thing with the governor, right? Like she was just like, Carol's ex-husband, one of those types where there's just a bad sort. And they took that and like this world fits them like a pea in a pod. So I think that's an interesting thing because we haven't gotten very many of those. Like they always had tragic backstories about like, oh, they're, you know, we were just like you, but you know, she's just always been fucking crazy and abusive and, exploitative. And I think that's cool. There's nothing redeeming about her, and there never will be, because there was never anything to redeem.
Yeah. All right, that's it for the episode.
Yeah. Good episode. Hope you guys have enjoyed a recap. If you have some comments that you'd like to send in before the end of the season, because that's the next time, I think, at the season conclusion, we'll open up the mailbag again. Because we are, you might not know this, but we're recording all these in advance to kind of like fit our schedule. And give Jim extra time to edit this stuff. But if you'd like to get in on that feedback bonanza at the end of the season, send it in to watchingdead@baldmove.com. Of course, we have our forums at forums.baldmove.com if you want to get something out in real time. But yeah, thanks for shambling along with us and listening to our whispers. We appreciate it. And we'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.